give you an overview. This is a different talk for me. I want to just give an overall framework for how the Center for Environmental Farming Systems interacts with the organic farm community. Tell you the types of projects that we've developed. Slip in just a little bit of data here and there about from some of those projects. And really one of the thesis points here is how short-term, really farmer-driven projects, which is something that I've worked on a lot since I've been back down at North Carolina State, they also lead into a lot of these longer-term questions, which is something that can be addressed at in these systems types trials that we've heard from so many speakers, and how those two really complement each other very well. And then also some future directions for what we're doing at the center and some new activities. First, when I got back down there a couple of years ago, we went through an intensive needs assessment project, reevaluating what organic growers were really wanting from the center. And I'd like to say that we figured out what doesn't work through a review of the literature and trying to come up with the best techniques, but really we just flailed about for at least a year trying to figure out the best format to re-engage growers who had really been engaged with the center for about 10 years, but there's a tiring process that occurs over that, and you have to reinvigorate that process. Phone interviews, one-time meetings, one-person farm tours were things that we really tried that did not work very well for us. We had to spend a little more labor on it. What's that? Well, just with me. I went around to a number of the farms. That's where I was getting reacquainted with the growers. I was the one person. So maybe just my style. I don't know. But we ended up spending a lot more labor on a needs assessment than we ever thought we would. But I think we learned a lot out of that process. It's helped guide our research program significantly. We came up with a program of going to each farm multiple times over the growing season. And you go, and the first range of questions you hear, it changes just throughout the growing year because you're hearing what they're struggling with at that moment in time. And we found that really helpful. We also found it really helpful that we did go out as a team and not just one person ever. And we always went out there as a whole group. We have a weed specialist myself, agronomist Ron Heiniger, our corn specialist, a soil scientist, Carl Crozier, a tillage specialist, Alan Meyer, Nancy Creamer and Paul Mueller, of course, involved in this as well. We had several county agents and several crop consultants as well. Something that has changed since CEPS has been around is that very few of our growers work without a crop consultant these days. And every time we went out there, we expanded on a written farmer profile of each grower that we started when we first got there, just saying, what crops do you grow, how are they grown, laying out each another level of detail every time we visited there. And then after we would visit there, we would finish writing out that farmer profile, mail it to them, and ask them to make corrections. Is there anything we missed while we were on our trip seeing there? You start out with some very general questions that you probably would have figured out on your own. Anyways, you come out of that. But we kept on going further with it. But let me start with the broad questions that the organic farmers had. First, of course, was weed control. What can be done to improve our weed control? Second, our row crop farmers in particular are looking to reduce the amount of manure they're putting on their rotations. They're ending up with a lot of phosphorus buildup on most of the soils. Just this last year, we had a grower actually moldboard plow his field just so he could sort of bury his phosphorus for a little while and the certifier wouldn't notice. They're very interested in reducing the number of passes across the field. One of the previous speakers mentioned there'd be 10 passes, and we'll have growers that are doing many more. We'll have 3 to 5 passes with a rotary hoe, then 3 or 4 passes of between row cultivation, all the tillage involved, just an enormous number of passes across going across on these conventionally tilled organic fields. And a similar question for our row crop farmers is, what are the cropping alternatives that will allow for more diverse rotation? Most of our row crop farmers are looking at corn, soybean, and wheat. And so it's a very short rotation and creates a lot of the problems that we know. Weed control is my specialty, and so, I don't know, sometimes needs assessment is like one of those ink blot tests. You see what you want to see. But we did come up with a lot of meaningful weed questions. Some of the first projects that they guided us through was looking at stale seed bedding, a practice that has never been used in the Southeast as far as I can tell, but is very popular in some of the Midwest. Looking at that versus the relative costs and benefits of stale seed bedding versus just using post-planting use of a rotary hoe or a Lely. Very simple agronomic questions need to be re-asked in this organic context. Just how far, what is the seeding rate for some of these organic crops needs to be re-asked. And a perennial question goes into cultivar selection and whether we need to have our own breeding. And I think almost every speaker up here has talked about this breeding aspect of it. And it's certainly something that rose to the forefront of many of our growers' minds. And they're particularly interested in the weed competitiveness issue, whether through cultivar selection or breeding, whether they can improve their weed control. Here's the little bit of data I promised. So far from what we've seen down there, the stale seed bedding buys us a little bit. We'll get 30 to 40% better weed control out of a stale seed bedding approach. But that is fairly modest compared to even just one pass with a rotary hoe. You can see down there, we'll get 70, 80% weed control with just one pass of a rotary hoe. And the costs of stale seed bedding are about equivalent to stale seed bedding versus post-plant rotary hoeing. So our growers are continuing to shy away from this practice right now. Something else we've discovered in conjunction with them is that all these passes that they're doing across the field, they are really losing a significant amount of yield in soybeans anyway and beating up that crop. So they oftentimes do not have any option in this. If you don't put a number of passes across the field, you're not going to be able to run your combine through that. But we are losing yield somehow by beating up the crop, and we've seen this several years in a row right now. We can even see it between the number of rotary hoe passes and just sort of the physical stature of the crop. Simple questions like the seeding rate again. I was actually surprised if we go from the standard seeding rate that they're using on their conventional fields, and all of our growers that do row crops right now have a split operation. They'll be doing several hundred to 1,000, 2,000 acres conventionally, and they'll have several hundred acres in organic. And the difference in the seeding rates that they need to use between the organic and conventional for soybeans has been dramatic. We're getting a 70 to 80% improved weed control just by pushing that soybean density up just about until they'll start to lodge, until they'll about fall over. So that actually, I mean, it's a lot of seed to put out, but relative to the number of trips they're making across the field, that is a very cheap practice for them to incorporate. Our results so far on looking at cultivar selection, my grad student, which is back here somewhere, George Place, has been, this is a study he has of 45 different genotypes, trying to figure out one measurement that could be made on cultivars that might give us an indication of how competitive they are going to be with weeds. Because of doing a variety trial or doing breeding work and actually planting in weeds and weighing out the weeds, well, it's just a pain in the neck and nobody's really going to do it. So we were looking for a shortcut to do that. We could even use this kind of shortcut in normal cultivar trials. We have a very robust cultivar testing program in North Carolina. They're not going to do that under organic conditions, but is there anything we can measure on that crop growing in a relatively weed-free environment that will allow us to predict how well it's going to compete with weeds? And so far, the most promising one is just actually a very early overhead shot. We take a camera and place it over the crop row in a weed-free environment and measure its height and measure its percent ground cover at only 3 weeks. And at 3 weeks, you can see we have an R squared of 0.28. We can predict the amount of weed mass that's going to appear there much later in the season. So that's kind of been an interesting one. And we are working with the breeders now to look at what are the agronomic traits that allow a crop to get big at 3 weeks. And so far we're seeing seed size, petiole length, several factors that allow a crop to establish itself very fast. But into the season, height is not that big a deal. It's really that height and vigor that's there very early on in the cropping cycle. I'm not sure manuring is a verb. We use it as one down there. So again, we're having a really corn, soybean, wheat doesn't add to our rotation. We're really just dealing with a two-year rotation. And one of the problems that they have is they cannot get a legume in ahead of corn because we don't harvest our soybeans down there until November, oftentimes December, when we're harvesting our soybeans. So we're trying to look at places in the rotation to get legumes into the rotation so we can provide more of the nitrogen that way than instead of using all this chicken litter in our case and building our soil phosphorus levels. So Dave Wilson, I had your slide in here forever. I finally got my own picture now. Of looking at aerial seeding. Of course, this is old technology. There are a few remaining questions in here. This is Carl Crozier's project, a member of the team. and looking at aerial seeding of crimson clover into soybeans here, and we've tried it with hairy vetch as well. But one of the things I want to get back to my central thesis is these short-term projects, which I've been showing you, and the longer-term projects. The real question, once we started working with the growers on this, was not that they didn't believe that this couldn't work at times. What they need to know is, how often does it work? If I do it 10 years in a row, how many times in that span will I get a good take on this? Because it ain't cheap to plant this clover. It's, you know, $30, $40 an acre to put that corn out. So they got to know, am I going to hit this half the time, three quarters of the time? Thanks to you, Dave, we've got them all fired up about no-till organics right now, and I'm going to have to buy one of these things, I guess. We're very, very interested in no-till organics on the soybeans, primarily. Now, corn weed control has been very successful. I'd have to say across the 20 or so farmers we have, I seldom see an organic corn field where the weed control does not look good under conventional tillage. The soybeans, we probably have half the time when we can't even get a combine into the field until we have a good frost. So it can look very bad, and we have fields that get disked in every year as well. So the soybeans are a real weed control problem. They're hopeful that the no-till could help them. One of the problems we have down there is that our mulches melt a lot faster in the heat and the moisture that we have down there. So there's a couple of tools now that they're looking at that may make it more possible for us to do it. One is, this is a new cultivator we have. It's a Sukup cultivator. I don't know if anybody's seen these high residues. And when they mean high residue, I mean high residue. This will go through any amount of rolled down rye mulch that we've tried so far. So it really, it's on a parallel linkage. It slides up underneath the soil and will actually undercut weeds or the cover crop there. And so we're thinking that maybe if we can get one between row cultivation in our soybeans that are using the mulch, that we might be able to get a decent amount of weed control out there. The other thing that's coming that's really interesting is our growers are really interested in these organic herbicides now. They started out so expensive that a row crop farmer couldn't even contemplate them. But we're getting down now where we can get it around $100 an acre to get one application out there. So it is in the ballpark of possibilities given the current organic prices. So this is one of the research lay-by sprayers that we had built for doing on-farm trials with. And if anybody's worked with the organic herbicides before, they're non-selective. They're just complete tissue burn downs. And so we're really looking at highly directed sprays up underneath the soybean crop. We burn the soybeans a little bit, but we set the weeds back a whole lot. So to get back to this point, the longer-term questions embedded in these short-term questions, again, how often does the aerial overseeding work? Real interesting question long-term is, does organic no-till or any of these systems, what does that do to weed pressure over the long haul? And most of our growers got a little spoiled as they start the transition process. They have fairly clean fields given the herbicide systems they've been on. When you've been on Roundup Ready corn and soybeans for many years, you have very low weed seed banks. You get in 4 and 5 years, and then all of a sudden you're dealing with a lot more. And which crop rotations, again, many people have always said it, the crop rotation work is something that a grower cannot really evaluate. That's something that really we need these long-term station systems experiments to be able to evaluate from the weed control aspect, looking at what happens to weed seed banks over the long haul. One advantage we have at CEFS is that we have this giant systems experiment. Maybe I'll go forward to that slide if anybody's not familiar with this. This is over 200 acres that are dedicated to a systems experiment that started 10 years ago, and it's meant to go in perpetuity, however long that is. And we have, within the organic system alone, we get to set four different subplots, four different approaches to organic to compare with the other types of systems out there. Even those subplots, there's no subplot that's under an acre in size. Most of them are 2 to 3 acres in size of subplot. So it's a really interesting place to answer some of these long-term systems things. Let me see if I can go back. So our coming out of these short-term experiments, we've redesigned all four of those subplot systems that are in that trial, and we'll be implementing these next year. We're looking at a corn, wheat, soybean, and sunflower. That's the one crop that the growers can think about incorporating into their rotations that might work and lengthen the rotation a little bit. We're looking at a reduced tillage system of the same rotation. And again, it's a rotational tillage system, a lot like Dave Wilson talked about, where we're doing no-till during some for growing of some crops and then complete tillage for the growing of other crops in that sequence. we're having a system where we have 3 years identical to system one, but we're having perennial hay in that system for several years. We all know that that can really clean up our weed issues, and so the growers want to get a handle on that. It's a big commitment to commit yourself to doing hay when these growers have never had hay on their rotation. So, but if there was enough payoff, they might be willing to do that. And then we have 2 years of corn and soybean, and if anybody's familiar with the Nordell system, where they really look at a year where they dedicate to sort of cleaning their weed seed bank and growing cover crops to build up their soil organic matter, and we're designing that around that idea. Or the year fallow, where we're going to flush the weed seed bank several times throughout the year and do intensive tillage, but then also combine that with intensive cover cropping to hopefully preserve the soil resource as much as we can. I've already gotten my comment ending here, so I'll just show you the last new project we've got going on here. The center there gave us 120 acres recently to set up an area to do organic research that is only short-term in nature, but to do it in the proper organic context. From working with organic farmers, more than any other group of farmers I've ever worked with, they're the first to cry, you're doing this out of context. Your system does not look like my system. And that's a really hard thing to address, but the center has agreed to manage this acreage in an organic rotation on a production scale. They'll just sell the product off the farm as an organic product. But then we have in there places that we can do short-term experiments in the proper context. So we're really excited about that. We're setting up a rotation that looks something like what we think the growers should be probably doing. We have corn, soybeans, hay, wheat, and canola in that rotation that will be managed by the station staff there. So, all right. I think I'm out of time. Is there any questions? Well, speaking as a pre-tenure faculty member, I love the number of short, simple agronomic questions being asked. A lot of in my weed work, there's new cultivation equipment, these organic herbicides, really a lot of it around just sort of fine-tuning what their weed control program looks like, and that's what we're doing here. You know, from my perspective, that out-of-context cry is really applicable in here. Because I've been doing these short-term experiments on three other research stations around the state who've been great about doing organic work, but again, their weed seed bank numbers are really low. And so I can get a lot of stuff to work on those stations, but can I get it to work in pigweed hell is a different question.
In terms of establishing legume in the soybean, up at Cornell we have some success with mounting a drop seeder on the back of the cultivator and then dribbling seed down into the next row.
That's great. That's a great point. And that's another great one with a sort of needing some long-term data on that. We've tried that 2 years in a row now. In 1 year, it all completely died. It's fairly, our last cultivation is in mid-July on soybeans, for instance. It's hot. I mean, it's over 100 degrees multiple times before you get to cool season. So you can kill that clover in some years. And in some years, this year it seems to be doing fine. So whether how consistently that might work would be really helpful to know. That's a great point. And the other thing the growers want to get at is, you know, they can go in with a full rate of manure in the years where they have a poor stand of clover, and then they can go with no manure practically when they have a great stand of clover. But, you know, they'd like to know about what percentages they're going to be shooting on those. Well, the hottest material out there is the bitter almond extract, but economically, the clove oil is working out to be about the cheapest right now. So, and that's and they're all basically the same in terms. It's, I mean, what's hottest at the lowest dilution is hardly relevant, really. It's they're all non-selective. They all burn. Just a matter of what can you put out there to get the amount of burn you want for the cheapest per acre cost. And so, the clove oil is shooting the cheapest right now. That is all amazingly changeable. The production cost on those herbicides is not that high. They've been charging $400 an acre just because there weren't many people doing it. So. When going organic?
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. No. Well, from what the growers see, they're definitely seeing a yield hit. So, I mean, we're now telling growers to count on a 25% yield hit for the first little while. Now, we've gotten a few growers that have tightened that up a little bit, but they're all still seeing a yield hit. Of course, the economics are still working out significantly to their advantage, so.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, we have the highest soybean yield in the state for conventional versus organic. People cultivating like crazy. They're really good and they have really, you know, high tech applications in the state.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And actually, I think that's where our yield hit is coming from. It's coming from just the weed control point of view. And our growers are not very good at it. I mean, most of the growers that are doing this can barely remember cultivating or may never have cultivated. So, yes.
How are you laying your new treatment on top of pasture?
No, there is, yeah, and you just sort of have, we're actually spending an entire year in a cover crop trying to wash out some of the old, you mean, so we divided the four organic treatments into four separate subplot systems, ran that for 8 years, you know, and now we're restarting all those systems with different mindsets and all those four subplots, and so we're actually, you know, washing that out for a year as much as we can, but then we're still going to have that residual riding with us for a little while. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. These systems experiments as to how to change that is a little tricky. I don't. Yeah. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.